On today's episode of Biomedical Design Stories, we're joined by Leon Amarillo and Sean Riley from Lexington Medical. We'll be discussing Lexington Medical's approach to innovation, advanced manufacturing, and building a growing workforce. And I'm joined by my co-host, Brian Johnson, president of MassMedic.
Thanks, Matt. Here's a bit about our guests. Lexington Medical is led by CEO Leon Amarillo, a medical device veteran and successful entrepreneur. With 30 issued or pending medical device patents, Leon is a recognized innovator who is disrupting the status quo in medtech. Sean Riley is the vice president of sales at Lexington Medical. He has over 25 years of experience in medical device sales and business development.
All right, Leon, Sean, thank you guys for coming today. We're really grateful to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, I'd love to jump in with a discussion about the AON endostapler, which is a minimally invasive surgical stapler. Leon, this is not your first rodeo. This is, you know, you're a serial entrepreneur. Can you just talk a little bit about how you identified this market opportunity, how you made the decision to get into this market?
I was fortunate enough to co-found my first company, Rhythmia Medical, together with my business partner in 2004. That company had very innovative technology for cardiac rhythm management, and we ended up selling the company to Boston Scientific in 2012. For me personally, I felt like I wanted my second rodeo to actually create a long-lasting company and build something to commercialize, to manufacture, and to take it all away. That was something I was looking for. And specifically when I left Boston Scientific, we were looking for a category that we felt was open to competition. That's not to belittle or downplay at all the incumbents, but specifically, although my background was in cardiology, I was specifically looking for a medical device product where I felt the existing incumbents were a little bit stagnant and where one could try to compete and offer some alternatives. And specifically, after a long process, it took me about 18 months since I started the company to really hone in and zero in on what it was that I wanted to create with Lexington Medical. And through canvassing a large number of medical device categories and segments, specifically decided to focus on surgical stapling because this is a very, very large category. It's a very ubiquitous tool. Surgical staplers are used to cut and staple a whole bunch of different organs, anywhere from the lung to the liver, the pancreas, the stomach, the intestine, the appendix. It's a very ubiquitous tool used tens of millions of times a year around the world. And yet, the vast majority of hospitals in the United States only have two options available to them. Only two. Now, those two companies are big, and they're good companies, and they've been around a very long time. But I asked myself a question that appears very basic. Why not three? Can we try to create a product in this category that will offer improvements, innovation, better for the patient, better for the doctor, and offer a choice, and offer an alternative? And I think competition is good for everybody.
That's interesting. That's sort of, I don't know if that's counterintuitive to what I think about entrepreneurship or right on, because I can see both sides about competition. What is that? Is that a theory you had that if you have a market dominated with heavy competition, then you sort of get over some of the pioneering part of introducing a new technology? Were you specifically looking for a market where there were one or two dominant players where you could kind of grab share? How did you kind of come across that thought process?
And look, every company, a little bit the strengths and weaknesses of the founders sort of come into play in the early decision making, right? For me, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a physicist, I'm an engineer. I'm an engineer and a business person. And for me, when a segment is so large, multi-billion dollar, tens of millions of procedures, and two companies that, again, very good companies, very good products, this category has been around for 45 years. There should be more than two. One generally doesn't find in the world a lot of multi-billion dollar categories that are not brand new. That don't have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 competitors, and this one only had two. Now, Making a surgical stapler is very difficult. When I first got started, quite a few people who were so-called experts in the surgical stapling industry told me that it could not be done. It's impossible. The two incumbents have spent decades building this stuff. There's no way a third company, tiny little company with just a few people, is able to offer something that's even comparable to them from a technology performance point of view. But I respectfully beg to differ. I think there's room. I think there's room to not only match, but to improve on what they do and make it even better. And yes, find the places commercially for us where we can play.
Yeah. Were there other markets that you found that had similar dynamics, or was this kind of a unicorn?
No, there are other markets that have these dynamics. If I tell you,
I can tell you. You can tell me off from
for the next time. No, they were definitely,
So were you always the kid who picked on the toughest kid in school?
There you go. There you go.
Hey, big boy, come here.
For good and for bad, I am a little bit of a contrarian, and I think competition is good, and taking on challenges is, something that I thrive on personally. And where others see challenge, I see opportunity for me. So that's good and bad. Sometimes the mountains are too tall, but generally I've been fortunate.
I'm a big believer in collaboration, and that innovation takes collaboration, and it creates better innovation. I mean, what were the sort of critical initial ecosystem partners or steps that you took, to convince people to collaborate and to help you crack into this space that is so competitive?
Yeah. So there are two, first and foremost, contingency to be able to try to do what we're trying to do. And step number one is the clinicians, in this case, the surgeons. There is no way any medical device company can get off the ground without a very, very tight collaborations with clinicians. We have to remember every single moment of every single day that the product that we are making is going into people's bodies and cutting, stapling people's organs. So collaborating with physicians from day one, day zero, day minus one, is super important. So reaching out to surgeons, asking them to observe their procedures, learning and listening to them about what they like or don't like about their existing products, and trying to identify specific opportunities in the market starts on day minus one with the clinician. Once we have the initial seed of the idea, of course, engineering is the core of everything we do, right? So I was very fortunate in my first company at Rhythmia to work with some of the best engineers in the world, frankly. And once I knew what I wanted to do with Lexington Medical, called up a couple of people that I was very fortunate to collaborate with in my past, and discussed the opportunity with them, and then said, hey, we want to hire the world's best engineering team to go after this opportunity that we think exists here. So that's, for me, to be honest, one reason why I am in Massachusetts and I am in the Boston area. I didn't grow up here. I'm not originally from here. I'm not a New Englander by roots, but I came here for graduate school, and I stayed because of the talent that's here, because of the engineers and the clinicians and the engineers. This is the core of what we do, and the collaboration that's needed.
We were pretty unique early on and still are in that Leon loves being out in the field, CEO, founder of the company, lead engineer, all the above. And he likes nothing more than being in the OR with surgeons. And they find it very refreshing that when they actually give constructive feedback or ideas, that it doesn't go into some inbox somewhere and a few years later, maybe it comes together. We turn around things very quickly. We've taken many ideas that surgeons have shared with us and actually implemented them into our products, without them really even having an understanding of what we're doing. And then we bring it back to them and they're like, wow, you've, within a matter of weeks or months, you've implemented that into the product and made it that much better. So I hear it all the time that they love the fact that we listen, the fact that we take actual action on the feedback that they give and make the product better, because it is a fluid product. It is not a stagnant product. And every version that we have that comes out, whether it's our handle or our reloads or some other component of what we do, a lot of it has some personalization from a surgeon that we've gotten direct feedback from. And to be honest with you, they love that. As anyone would guess, somebody listens to you, you take action on it, they love that. And I think that's one thing about a lot of the surgeons that we work with that really creates stickiness and creates that longevity and that true partnership, because they do listen, or we do listen to them, and it's unique.
It's probably counter to what a lot of people think of for medical devices as well. You know, I think people think a lot of times about these being legacy technologies that don't innovate quickly, that kind of, you know, it's a sort of single product or innovation that is put into the market and then it sort of sits there. And this idea, you know, iteration and continual improvement is not, you know, I think it's not something that people necessarily think of for medical devices. It's really interesting to hear you doing that in this space.
When you looked at the challenge and, you know, surgical staplers, I mean, first of all, this is, you know, full circle moment for me. Like, my introduction to medical devices, my father sold the first generations of surgical staplers for U.S. Surgical. So I started playing with those things as a kid because they looked like toy guns. And my mom wouldn't have let me play with toy guns. So when we went to visit my dad, he had all these things that looked like toy guns. So we just were firing them off. We fired off thousands of dollars of sample products, which didn't make him very happy. But when I think about surgical staplers, I'm just like, it doesn't seem like a product that had much innovation at all past those early days. And when you looked at the innovation challenge, was it process innovation? Was it product innovation? I'm just curious how you thought about how you innovate that.
Yeah, I think people assume that because the category has been around for over 40 years and the two large incumbents have been there for a long time, that there's nothing left to do, that there's no more unmet needs. And respectfully, I beg to differ. I think when the companies become very large and they're multi-billion dollar businesses just selling surgical staplers, the hurdle from a purely economics business school point of view of innovation, it has to be so big and so significant to move the needle at a large company to be worth the trip, to quote one of my friends. I think actually that creates an opportunity for a small company. These devices, as you said, Brian, have been developed since the 70s. They were really developed for intestinal anastomosis, although today they are being used for a far wider range of applications. Lung surgery, liver surgery, pancreas surgery, these devices were not actually designed for those applications, and yet those surgeons are using them for those applications because they have nothing else. And I actually think as a newcomer, seeing the world from a different lens gives actually an opportunity to be there and think, oh, can we do something a little bit different? And sure, that may not be an innovation worth $1 billion, but as a small company, you make incremental steps and iterations all the time, and lo and behold, you wake up one day and your product is twice as good as anybody else.
I love it when Leon says, I beg to differ. I think there's a lot of subtext in there that we're not getting. I think maybe there's an uncensored version of that.
I think one other thing, though, that really makes us unique is that this is all we do. Every day, every person in the office that you guys are, that you toured, all we focus on is stapling, right? The engineering team, the operations team, the sales team. That's not only great for us as a company, knowing that we wake up every day as a cohesive unit and figure out how to make the best stapler in the world, but also when we're out in front of surgeons globally, and that's our story, it resonates because they're like, okay, you're not distracted and you're not trying to sell me 10 different things that you're pretty good in each 10. When you walk in to sell me this stapler for my particular specialty or for whatever, you're probably one of the smarter people out there on this stapler. All you focus on is this. So there is an area to say, hey, I do believe you. You probably do have the best stapler because that's all you do. And it's an impactful message to share with people. And it's impactful for everybody in the company too, to know that everyone at headquarters is working on fulfilling that mission of making the best stapler on earth.
I'm curious about the impact of COVID and what I view as sort of an awareness of the needs and the benefits of distributed care, where you can do minimally invasive surgeries more easily in like an outpatient setting. Is that, do you look at that and see, you know, growth for the market overall for you guys? Is that a factor?
On a couple of themes that you brought up, Matt, this transition from large hospitals doing every single procedure to more distributed care, more ambulatory procedures. It's definitely true in the U.S., definitely accelerated by COVID. But in my travels, I definitely see this phenomenon being a global phenomenon. We as a company have opened two overseas offices in the past year and a half. We expect to open more. And as part of this work internationally and the export that we are doing, we are seeing these healthcare phenomena around the world. I do personally believe that distributed care and these minimally invasive surgeries happening outside of the large hospital is actually better for the patient, better for the healthcare system overall, not only from a cost perspective, but actually from a quality perspective for the patient. And definitely the world is looking at what is happening in the United States. And I, in my travels, I travel overseas a lot. I see this lesson being learned worldwide, and I'm, to be honest, very happy for the patients. They're doing better for it, and it's, I think, a good thing for all our society.
I'm really impressed by the patience that you convey as an entrepreneur. You know, I mean, obviously, you're probably great guns all the, you know, to push through and make sure that you're hitting your targets and things like that. But I just find that there's a calmness to this business plan, to this product category. It doesn't seem like you're rushed, that you have a plan, that you have a taking this road that is not the obvious road. How did you get to this point as an entrepreneur? Did you, clearly you must have had some formative experiences at, in your first company. But, you know, do you feel as on your second time around that you're like, you're doing a different playbook, or is this the playbook you ran at the other company?
So thank you for the question. It's actually a very interesting topic to discuss. First and foremost, I am very blessed and fortunate with an investor group. We would not be able to do what we're trying to do and go after the opportunity that we're trying to go after and think long-term as we're doing without this investor group. So I'm fortunate, I'm blessed. Many of our investors had invested in our previous company and saw the fruits from a financial point of view and the returns from the first company. And I think from an entrepreneur's point of view, aligning oneself with the investors is so important. I cannot overstate that. I have said no and rejected proposal for investment many times in my career and at this company, not for valuation reasons and not for brand name reasons. Brand name investors with actually sometimes better valuations, but it is important to me and to our company to have the shareholder base and the investors that understand what we're trying to do, understand that this is a long-term vision that we have in place, that I am looking at what we can achieve 10, 15, 20 years out, and the investors that I want on board, the shareholders that I want on board, are the people who are aligned with that, even though it may cost in the short term a couple percentages of dilution, or it's not necessarily the big blue chip brands that people will have heard of. This is a long-term business that we're trying to build. So we would not be able to do what we're trying to do had it not been for the investor base. So I have to start with that because, as we mentioned, I started the company in 2013. First dollar came in the door 2018. Takes quite some time tooling up. And we'll talk later about manufacturing, but being able to tool up to scale production is very expensive. It's tens of millions of dollars of tooling. So obviously we had to get investors and shareholders, and they needed to be aligned with our vision and what we're trying to do. So that's definitely a big part of the story. And yes, I tell our people every day, I tell the team every day, I don't care about the short term. This is all about the long term, doing right by the customer, doing right by the product, building the manufacturing infrastructure. So that we can create something in 2031 that we will be proud of.
That's great.
And I will say, as we launched the product in 2018, we certainly learned a lot of lessons along the way, right? We did not have the roadmap of, hey, let's start here and go here. We learned things early on, and Leon was patient enough to say, hey, it's time to adjust. Let's go somewhere else. We may have failed there, but we learned a lot from it, and we've made a lot of adjustments along the way. In kind of our strategies and how we do things. And I think that's been able to, over the first year and a half or 2 years, get us to where we are today, because we learned a lot early on. The patience of the investors, of Leon and everybody else with the company, allowed us to make the changes. And we've found our way now. And now we kind of have a pretty good idea of what direction we want to be going in, and it's paid off. So
I could go down this path for another half an hour, I think, but we got to take a quick break. We're going to take a look at a facility tour we took a couple weeks ago at your new headquarters. And then on the other side of that, we'll be back to talk a little bit more about your manufacturing.
Boyd Technologies is an advanced materials and technology company operating in the medical device and life sciences market. We're experts in regulated single-use devices and liquid media solutions. Our growth platform provides a full suite of services for design and development, advanced manufacturing, and fulfillment operations. To learn more, visit us at boydtech.com.
We're here in Bedford, Massachusetts at Lexington Medical's new headquarters facility, and we're going to take a tour where they do all of their design, engineering, and manufacturing. Leon, thanks for having us. Before we go in and take a tour, can you tell me a little bit about this disruptive device that you guys are bringing into the market?
Welcome, Matt, and welcome, Brian. So excited to host you here today. What we are designing and making here is the AEON surgical stapling device. AEON actually means forever in Greek, the country of my origin. And what we are making here is the most advanced surgical stapler in the world. It is used to cut and ligate organs and tissue all the way from the chest cavity, the lung, to the abdominal cavity. It's used for the liver, the pancreas, the stomach, the intestine, the colon. And it is designed with the most innovative feature in this segment create the least amount of bleeding for the patient, the lowest leak rate in the world, and we continue to innovate. So what sets us apart is that this device today looked different a year and a half ago, and will look different again in another year and a half by continuous investment in engineering and product development.
Great. I'm excited to see the facility. Can we take a walk around?
With pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay, Leon, you just moved into this incredible new facility. Can you talk a little bit about what this means to the growth of your company?
Yeah, absolutely. We're super excited. We moved into this 30,000 square foot facility a couple months ago. We were in a 10,000 square foot facility in Billerica. Today we have 60 employees. We've doubled or tripled the size of our company every year the past few years, and we expect to continue to do that going forward. So this new space will accommodate hopefully hundreds of people here going forward, both here as well as in our offices around the world.
Well, this is a really challenging marketplace. I mean, you're entering a market where two of the largest medical device companies dominate, I think, 70% market share. What are you guys going to bring to this market as a differentiator?
Yeah, well, actually, what some people see as a challenge, to be honest, some people even called me crazy when I started the company, was actually a very deliberate decision to go into this segment because I felt it was stagnant. These two legacy companies have been around for decades. They're good companies, but without a lot of competition, there's not a lot of innovation. So in my opinion, by being able to offer choice, we improve options for patients, improve options for surgeons, and makes everybody better, everybody work harder.
Yeah, and this is a very conservative industry. How hard was it to get this company started, to raise funding, to hire your initial employees? You must have some good stories about that.
Yeah, I was very fortunate in my previous stint in this industry. I had started a previous company that was successful, was acquired by Boston Scientific. I worked at Boston Scientific for a short period of time, and I actually saw the opportunity to compete, to offer more options for patients and for doctors. So I was very fortunate, both in terms of investors as well as some of the early employees, to tap into the local network here, some of my connections, and to tell people, let's go for it.
Great. I think we're going to go take a look at some of your technology and meet some of your engineering team.
This is supposed to simulate an individual, the patient's abdomen, a torso, and through here on the camera, this is what surgeons see on the screen. They see the device, how it's used clinically. So we use this area to train physicians as well as employees and shows them how the device is used in real life. This is our R&D and engineering area. Engineering is really the core and the heart of our company. This is where we get to design new products, new ideas, new innovations for surgeons. We'll be introducing you to Andy. We're very fortunate to have Andy here leading the engineering effort with an excellent team. And I'm sure you'll be glad to speak to him.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you're working on?
Every day is different. As a startup company, whether it's designing new products or fighting the current fire, it's always dynamic. I guess on this given day, I'm designing a new product. But on other days, I'm refining the performance of current products, making sure the robotics and the lines are running well. It's really any number of things.
And when did you start with the company? I mean, how long have you been here?
Pretty much from its original inception. It was four of us employees and trying to create something from nothing. And it's been amazing to see this whole development and not only create something from nothing, but create something that has real impact. All of us engineers here work in medical devices because we love helping people. We love using our skills as engineers to create these inventions, these creations, and to improve patients' lives and also provide doctors with a constantly improving set of tools.
Yeah, I love that purpose-driven story. I mean, how'd you get involved in the startup space? I mean, were you working at another startup before this?
I'm an MIT engineer by training, a couple degrees, a bachelor's and a master's in mechanical. Had an opportunity to do a PhD at MIT as well. I deferred for a year thinking I wanted to go try out industry, definitely leaning towards being in a startup because a lot of us MIT entrepreneurs are highly self-motivated and want to kind of know the entire production and development process. I started working with Leon at Rythmia Medical, and then we were acquired shortly thereafter by Boston Scientific. So I got the opportunity to kind of see how a small company works and then transition, of course, through that acquisition into working for a large company. Worked for Boston Scientific for about 3.5 years. And then Leon gave me another call and said, hey, I've got a new idea and I need you to design this device from the ground up.
And now you guys are really kind of going into scale-up mode. I mean, can you talk a little bit about the difference between a four-person, startup and sort of where your focus is now as you guys, have this beautiful new facility, hiring people, you're starting to scale up production?
Thankfully, it hasn't changed our core focus on incredible engineering. We constantly focus on maintaining the quality of our products, scaling production while not limiting ourselves and still focusing on improvements, next generation products, really has not been a detriment whatsoever. In fact, as we've grown, we've been able to scale and distribute the labor and continue to innovate.
Great. Well, I'm excited to see some of the production facility.
My name is Alexi Gonzalez. I am a laser welding supervisor. This is the machine that I'm working. So what we're doing here is we weld the anvils with the anvil covers, these two parts, and we put it together. And then what we do is we grab the fixtures. Can you see in here?
Yeah.
So we use these fixtures and we put over here together. Then we use the cover. We put it together over here. And we insert on the machine. So after that, just I have to touch the green button and hit start. And it's gonna take like 22 seconds to do one part. So after that, when I take it out the part, what I have to do is check the components and everything, the anvil, make sure that everything is very good welding, no contamination, no oxidation. And after that, we're going to the OGP and I do another test on the pull test machine to see how strong is the part.
Yeah.
And so actually I have 2 years in here. I want to say thank you to Leo for giving me the opportunity to work with him and the great company of Lexington Medicals.
And a new promotion, right?
Yes, the supervisor. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, what's your favorite part? I mean, what do you love about
it? I think I love everything in here. You know what most is the people.
Yeah.
Yes. People just great in here. People get communicated one with the other, work like a big team.
Yep.
And that's the more important part of the Lexington Medical.
That's great. It's amazing work you're doing. You're helping patients.
Yes.
It's incredible.
My name is Margaret. I'm a manufacturing engineer / product engineer here at Lexington Medical. So I work primarily in our clean room space, developing new technologies and automation to improve our production process and help us keep up with the demands of the market. So in our clean room, we make both our handles and our reloads. So over on the far side of the clean room is where we make our bed sub-assemblies. So those are the actual parts that hold the staples within the reload. And then over on this side of the room, you can see we make the full level reloads. So we actually pin our sub-assemblies together to make a saleable product. You can see we have several pieces of automated machinery to not only aid the production process, but also provide us higher quality standards. But in addition to our automated machines, we of course value all of our operators here. Everyone here contributes an important step to the process, and we've actually been able to train a lot of our operators on how to work with this automated equipment, helping them kind of move forward with the technology in the manufacturing space.
Real co-working with the robot.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, obviously the robots are running 24/7, so the operators have to know how to fix them and have to know how to troubleshoot them when the engineers aren't here. So we're give them a lot of freedom to learn things.
Yeah, so we take the approach here of leveraging technologies really to help our manufacturing team and to leverage those technologies to solve some of the the critical points in the manufacturing process that are prone to human errors and inconsistencies. We know that every reload is means a human life, right? And so quality by far is the overarching focus within the manufacturing facility. Everyone here knows that we are delivering products that has a meaningful impact on patients' lives every single day.
And I mean, this must be incredibly exciting to be going from small team, you know, production environment to now thinking about robotics and, you know, co-working with the production team.
Yes.
And how you scale that. I mean, are there more robotics in the future for you guys?
Absolutely. It is very exciting to be here. All of us are, frankly, quite excited to have this space, to start really growing into the space. And there is absolutely going to be more automation and more application of just called the latest technologies going forward as we scale. As I said before, ultimately, we want to deliver the highest quality products, the best products to our customers. And one of the opportunities here is really to be able to kind of take a step back and look at how we can use the latest technologies to allow us to deliver that experience to not only our surgeons, but to, also to the patients.
Yeah. Well, it's an incredible facility. Thanks for showing us around.
Thank you very much as well.
We just had such an incredible tour of this facility and met a bunch of people on the team. Can you talk to me a little bit about the team that you guys are building here?
Our recruiting philosophy is really centered on hiring a diverse set of highly talented individuals who are truly committed to bringing innovation to healthcare providers and their patients. We've created a really nice collaborative culture of people here. Which is good because that really helps foster aggressive growth goals, and we have a lot of growing to do.
Where is the hiring concentrated? Is it across all roles?
Right now we are expanding in every way possible. Engineering certainly, and anyone who's tried to hire anyone in almost any job knows that it is an incredibly hot job market.
How important is that cultural piece for you as you're tasked with going out there into the market in a really tough time for the labor market?
Yep.
I mean, how important is that for you to
have a mission that people that really resonates with people, to have that connection to products that are directly helping patients is really special, and it really speaks to job seekers. So from my perspective, there's no better story to tell than you're going to come here, be able to use your skills to actually build something that has a direct and positive impact on patient outcomes. So it's kind of easy to sell, actually, because it's a great mission.
Very exciting. So if people are looking for jobs or they're interested in Lexington,
find you. Yes, please. Lexington Medical /careers. Yes, come see us. Come talk to us.
Great. Thank you so much to Leon and the team at Lexington Medical. This was a fantastic facility tour, and it's definitely one of my favorite parts of my job is being able to come into facilities like this to see advanced manufacturing and innovation and a growing workforce. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll get back to the interview.
For more than a quarter of a century, MassMedic has been the voice of the groundbreaking medical technology industry in New England, advocating for sound public policy that supports innovation and fostering a community built on a shared purpose, saving and improving the lives of patients everywhere through medical technology. Since the beginnings of New England's dominance in health tech, our members, the women and men who make up MassMedic, are researching, designing, developing, supplying, manufacturing, and deploying the next generation of medical innovations around the globe. The heart of health tech beats here in Massachusetts. And at MassMedic, we're proud to be part of that journey. Learn more about how you can join our community at massmedic.com.
Okay, welcome back. Leon, thank you again for that opportunity to come to see your new headquarters and the facility. It's super impressive. And like I said, it's really kind of the favorite part of my job, getting to see this stage in particular of just starting to really scale up and build that footprint. I want to talk about your choice to manufacture here in Massachusetts because, supply chain stability and resilience, was not exactly on the top of everybody's mind prior to the pandemic, really. And I would argue that a lot of people kind of given up on domestic manufacturing and just didn't think a lot about it. But your company, kind of building on what you just said about this patient, longer term approach to the market, you made that decision prior to all of this. Why?
To be honest, it's a relatively easy choice from my point of view. Being in Massachusetts is pretty much a no-brainer from the talent point of view, as I mentioned previously, with both the clinicians as well as the engineers. And then, as my friend Sean mentioned before, we make one product. We make a stapler. We wake up every morning. We go to sleep every night. One product, the stapler. It better work. It better work not only well, but the best in the world. And the way to achieve that is to control our destiny, to be vertically integrated, to build everything ourselves from the ground up is the key to everything that we do. So building here locally is, in a way, a no-brainer. We want to have the best stapler in the world. We want to scale the company to produce it at very high volume. To give you just a sense of scale, in the world, tens of millions of staplers are fired every year. Somewhere in the range of 20 to 25 million of these are fired every year. If we want to be a legitimate player in this industry, we need to prepare ourselves and think about being able to produce not only hundreds of thousands of units a year, but millions of units a year. And to do that, we need to invest in manufacturing, invest in the infrastructure, build the capabilities, the tooling, the machines, ourselves in order to be able to do that. So doing it in our backyard in Massachusetts is very natural.
How has the last 2 years been for you given that decision? I mean, there's been so much disruption in the supply chain. Everybody's felt some degree of that, but how have you guys fared through this period of time?
Yeah, it has been very disruptive, no doubt about that, starting off with shipping challenges, getting products from point A to point B. Many of us know what the UPS, FedExes of the world went through when travel was basically shut down a couple of years ago. No doubt it has been very challenging for us, but I will say that one of the things that I'm proudest of as a company is that we have had no back orders, not even zero. In the last 2 years or since our company has started, has a customer asked for a product and we have not been able to ship it on the same day. How have we been able to do that despite these challenges? I would say it's all about the team. We are very fortunate to have an incredible, talented team on the operations level, headed by Mark and his team, that have invested a huge amount of mental energy in being able to be ready and prepared for this. The other thing that has definitely helped us is we've used capital in our balance sheet. We find ourselves having to buy raw materials for production, sometimes 12, 18, 24 months out. This is expensive. Our balance sheet is probably not as efficient as it could be in an ideal business school world. But again, as we discussed before, this is all about the long term. This is taking care of our customers, and our investors have been very understanding. It's like, this is what we have to do to be able to not only survive, but actually be ahead of the game. In our competitors are backordered, and we're not. And the way to do that is to be hyper-focused, smart, and invest.
Thinking forward, you know, and connecting your manufacturing footprint and capabilities to innovation, you know, Sean, you mentioned it before about your, you know, that's one of the key differentiating factors for you guys, is you're able to receive feedback, you know, put it into the right hands in engineering, push it through manufacturing and deliver, you know, innovation back to the market really quickly. I mean, is that the secret sauce that you guys are building? How does it?
Being vertically integrated and manufacturing everything in-house gives us basically two very strong strengths. One is controlling the quality and having the highest quality control standards in the industry. And secondly, the ability to innovate and iterate, because we control our destiny. We make everything ourselves. When I am in the operating room and come up with an idea for an iteration or improvement, we can often get it out in the field within weeks. There's no way we could have been able to do that if we didn't make our own stuff.
Was it always your intention to, when you built the company, to build out manufacturing operations on site?
It is a question that we've asked ourselves from time to time. Is it the right thing to do? So it's, oh, and don't get me wrong, we question everything every day. We never know the right answer. We're learning every single day, right? So, so this is not a religion. This is not out of ideology. This is because it's the right thing to do. I still think it's the right thing to do. And as far as I can see, it remains the case and has been the case. But we have to ask ourselves the question every day. Otherwise, we get stuck.
The seeing your facility and seeing the robotics and the smart manufacturing in particular was really, you know, from a manufacturing background, is really exciting and compelling. I think it's also such an it's such a great example of the co-working of robots and people. And I think that that's such a huge misconception about sort of the future of manufacturing is, you know, it has to be a lights out automated facility, you know, or overseas to be cost competitive. You're really doing that for quality control and efficiency, right? I mean, it's both of those things.
99% good enough is not good enough in a surgical stapler. We need a much higher quality standard. The way to get there is to invest a lot in automation. And we build our own machines. We build our own robots, our own automation. And sometimes people tour around and they ask me, oh, Leon, are you doing this so that you don't have to employ as many people? And the answer is no, that's not at all the reason why we're doing it. We are doing this to be able to provide the best quality products and to grow significantly. And if we grow significantly the way we've been doubling and tripling every year, we will need both. We will need more robots, better robots, and more people. And the two can definitely coexist.
Is that robotics ecosystem, specifically for manufacturing, is that, you know, that's here in Massachusetts?
Yeah, and to be honest, we build our own robots. We do our own stuff. We not only design and build our own product, but we build our own machines. This is a...
Can you build us a robot?
You want some coffee? Yeah. I'll say we've been very fortunate. We have a lot of surgeons that are interested and make time to come up to our old facility as well as our new facility. And I will tell you, it leaves a lasting impression. We've got surgeons that came up years ago that still talk about their visit and how unique the automation was, how unique the quality control was. And they still talk about the people that they met, the people that gave them the tour. It's impactful. Just this week, we've had two international surgeons in the office. It's only Wednesday, and we've already had two international surgeons come through. The beauty is that we invite them. We ask them. They don't have to say, hey, I want to come see your facilities. Can you come see our facilities? We proactively invite them to come up and actually see what's going on, because again, we're this third player going against these two behemoths. And for people to really see where the product is made and see the team that does this, it's huge. It's an impactful time when they're in the office with everybody there, and it makes a difference. It really does, and they thoroughly enjoy the tours and really seeing how everything is manufactured. So it's a great part of things that we offer.
As another Massachusetts manufacturer, I can say my father started our business, and he always spent money on our facility, and he always said to us, it was, and still does, it's the first impression and the last impression that all your clients are going to have. And you see it. I mean, when you're out, talking to the folks who are using the product, who you're collaborating with, it really matters. And I think that's one of the reasons I'm so excited we got to tour your facility and take video cameras in there, because it's not what people think of when they think of manufacturing. It's advanced. It looks like a clean room. It looks like an operating room. It's a really nice clean room. And your operators are incredible. So it was great.
Yeah. I've taken the tour a couple of times with some folks from the state, and you can see the lights turn on, because I think it's really important. I mean, when you tour your facility, you actually start to put some really big pieces together about the future of manufacturing in this country and how we can actually compete on a much broader scale and compete with the global scale, right? Compete against countries that can just throw cheap labor at things and throw hundreds of bodies at products, rather than, this the way that the American way that we need to compete, right? It's just working side by side with automation and innovating and working smarter and working in that sense. I just this is more a comment than a question. I mean, I just see these people. I've seen people's the lights go turn on when they walk through the factory. I really commend you guys for doing it. Obviously, it's it has to make good business sense, and clearly it does. But it's a showstopper, especially when you get to that manufacturing floor, because I've toured a lot of medical device companies. Most companies that are sort of startup plus, which I think this is kind of where you guys are, right? You see an R&D lab, right? And you see some cute regulatory, you see the executive suites, but you rarely kind of get to see a manufacturing floor in the size of company that you're at. So it's just, I think it's remarkable.
I have a question about the sort of back to your investor group, because I think we have, one of the challenges for manufacturing is it's just not, we don't have proper financial incentives to invest in manufacturing businesses in America. The VC market really doesn't, it's a long-term patient approach, so you've obviously found investors that match with that profile, right?
Yes, I would say most of our investors, and this is by design, are not your traditional venture capitalists that whose name one would recognize every day. We have purposely tried to identify family offices, non-traditional investors who do have a longer-term approach to investing, to being a shareholder, to actually wanting to be part of the journey. I've purposely seeked out and fortunate enough to find, successful individuals in different industries that themselves have come from manufacturing or an industrial background, not necessarily in medical devices, in other domains that have actually given me advice. And some of the comments that you made before, Matt, about from your father about investing in the facility. One of our biggest shareholders and investors, he runs a completely different business in the industrial domain. And he's been telling me the same thing for years, is Leon, invest in the factory. And he's right. He's right. Because when people come over, be it employees, customers, physicians, other visitors, it's people are blown away. And we have to remember every day, and I tell the team every day, the product that we're making is critical. People's lives depend on it. If we don't hold ourselves to the highest standard, this is where everything starts. And when the physicians, surgeons come in and see the amount of care and attention and quality control that we have, it makes the rest of the conversation so much easier.
Is the talent there for you, though, and on the manufacturing side? I mean, you guys have done a good job of growing. You've grown a lot. Are you finding that there is less domestic manufacturing talent out there, or
yes,
you know, are you having to build your employee yes. base too from the scratch? You know, in terms of teaching them how to work on a in a factory, where are you getting your? You
know, That's fair. There are when we recruit specifically for manufacturing and operations related positions, it's not easy to find local candidates with experience in manufacturing, not only in medical devices but in general in hardware businesses. Be it electronics or other hardware manufacturing businesses, the local talent pool in that is not as deep as we find it, for example, in design engineering or regulatory or clinical type roles. It is definitely a challenge. We have had to import or relocate candidates from other parts, not only of the country, but also of the world. For certain roles in manufacturing, it is definitely a challenge. The other approach that we take, which you alluded to, Brian, is we often find hiring younger people who may not necessarily have the experience on day one of having done this before, but letting them grow with the company. It is part and parcel of this long-term patient approach. Some of our best people have come right out of school, and yes, on day one, they don't know as much or they haven't done as much, but 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 years into it, we are so grateful and fortunate.
You're not only paying competitive wages. I mean, your employees are happy. I mean, you can tell, right? I mean, I can always tell when there's a good company culture because, you know, when the CEO walks down the hallways, it, you know, people don't start clinging against the walls.
The other way.
I mean, they, you know, the people know each other. People say hi. I mean, that stuff really, you can tell, right? It permeates that when there's actually good culture.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, perks are important and pay and benefits, all of course, although those things are sort of a given, especially in today's job market. But we spend a lot of time and effort and thought, for example, when we moved into this new facility that you guys visited in Bedford, we spent a lot of time and thought about the culture and bringing people together. And we purposely, even though the facility is large and can hold, can employ about 200 people, we purposely build one central cafeteria, the central hub of the facility. If you look at it from a geometry point of view, is the cafeteria. And we purposely have everybody from all aspects of the building, the executives, the engineers, the production people, the technician, the warehouse, everybody eats together in one hall, in one space. And that is very intentional. Yes, some people have to walk an extra 30 feet or climb a flight of stairs, but this is very, very intentional to get everybody together. And look, our workforce is very heterogeneous. It is a challenge for me as a CEO. The workforce goes all the way from salesperson in Australia to a technician on a non-exempt basis in the production room, on the clean room, but getting this whole group to be cohesive and to be aligned is a challenge, but it's something that I think about every day. Everybody, for example, who works at the company, even the technician, the non-exempt technicians and the receptionists, everybody has stock options at the company. Everybody does. It's very, very important for me that we are one, that we win together and we trip together, but that we are one.
That's incredible. How did you decide to do that? And patient investors, I guess. But I mean, to let everybody own a piece of the company is not a given, right? So,
I guess that's how I grew up. Then we're in this together. You know, yeah. I do think about it in the long term. I do come from, you know, before I came to Massachusetts, I spent most of my life in Israel, which is a very entrepreneurial country and environment, and it's kind of, it goes without saying that we're all in this together, that everybody, no matter the wage, everybody has a stake, everybody gets to participate.
Yes, so many of the things that we're talking about with you, Leon, seem, you know, sort of contrarian or sort of not what I think people might expect, and but they also seem obvious when you sort of lay them out, right? And I think that's what's just really cool about your story. I was smiling before because we did a facility renovation in our facility in 2017. We had two cafeterias, and one of the things we did was we made it into one. And it was, you know, it sounds so silly, but it was one of the best cultural moves we ever made. And, you know, it's, it goes back to what you said, Sean, about being able to understand each other, understand what you're doing in the work environment, what you're responsible for, what the customer needs are, and to sort of churn that that workflow, that innovation faster. You know, and if you don't have a company culture, has to facilitate that. And you're, in a lot of ways, you're creating that, not just the cafeteria, but it's really cool to hear.
Yeah, the word I often think about is being in integrity. All parts of the puzzle have to come together, right? We discuss the investor base and the customers and the employees and manufacturing investment. It has to be aligned. If one piece is out of sync, if we talked all this talk and said all these words, but we treated our employees poorly, that wouldn't work very well. So it all has to be in integrity.
It wouldn't permeate, right? You wouldn't feel it when you walk in, right? So you could, like, if it's just a slogan, then as soon as you pass through the doors, the whole facade kind of falls apart the first time you see somebody looking at Indeed on their computer screen. But I mean, Sean, do you feel that way? Do you feel a sense of, like, when you're recruiting new folks, or you're kind of telling the story of Lexington Medical, you know, how much does that story come out when you're talking about this company?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a core of what we try to present to people, for sure, and just the way of being different. And the other thing too, I think that we do as a company, and even try to pass on to folks during every stage of the interview, is just complete, open, honest transparency, right? Of this is what you're going to experience early on. Selling is hard. Every role is hard. You're not coming in here and you're not going to be handed this great book of business or whatever else. When I came on board, it's been 4 years ago this month. From day one, Leon has always preached transparency, open, honesty, good, bad, or indifferent. No surprises. That's kind of our mantra. Like, I don't want to be surprised in the sales world of an account that's happy, unhappy, whatever. You know, just lay it all out on the table to everybody up front. Let's just be aware of where each other are. And I think people like that, because some folks come from cultures and organizations where you kind of keep the news to yourself and keep things to yourself. But here we try. You can't force people to do it, but you really try to keep everything open. And that on top of everything else at Leon, and we've all talked about in the way of hiring and retaining people, it's a little bit refreshing, to be honest with you, because I've worked in places where you don't always know where you stand and different things that you do. But when you're in a culture of openness and transparency, there's nothing hiding around the next corner for you that you're not expecting coming at you in anything you do. It's just, it's a good work environment to be a part of.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's so cool.
You know, what's the strategic vision? You know, where are you guys going in the next 10 years?
I believe that we have the opportunity right in front of us. There's a lot of hard work to create a medium, big, high school, graduate school, whatever company. And maybe, hopefully, if we do our job well, maybe a decade from now, we'll have thousands of people selling hundreds of millions of dollars, and surgical stapling being the core, but there may be other things in the future for us as well.
Well, hopefully here in Massachusetts, but what, you know, you were successful the first go around. You sold your company to a large strategic. That's the dream of entrepreneurship, the dream, right? That everybody that starts a company has this: I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to sell, I'm going to get a big check, and then my life's going to be perfect. Of course, like everything in life, that's totally not what happens. But this time around, you're not looking to just build something to sell it. Can we just go back to when you sold your first company? Did you feel like maybe you left some stuff undone, or did you?
Yeah, no, definitely, for sure. That was part of my own personal journey and motivation. You know, financial aspect is one of it. We did very well in the first company. Our investors had a very nice return. You know, everybody's very happy that the product is being used to this day, every day, to treat patients with heart rhythm disorders, sold by Boston Scientific, and doing very well. And I'm very proud of that. But for me, in my journey, I felt like I wanted more. And no, I don't mean financially. I don't mean the money. I mean, I think we want to create something that will create jobs, be right for patients, be right for doctors, and leave something on this earth.
Part of my sort of personal thesis, I guess, is that manufacturing is really critical to innovation, that it's that it builds capacity in a company for innovation. And it's this feedback loop that you talked about, Sean. And I think, you know, that can be across the world, but I think it proximity in certain technologies really matters. So I'm really excited to cheer you on from the sidelines and to have you prove my thesis over the next decade. And but thank you guys so much for all the time, the facility tour, sharing your story with us. I think it's really compelling. I hope entrepreneurs will listen to it because I think it's a different take than you necessarily hear all the time. And I think it's really impressive.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's going to be Harvard Business School cases written about you guys when this, you know, not in the not too distant future. I love what you're doing, and I think it's really, really amazing. And you can just, you know, you can tell that you're not just blowing smoke, like that you believe everything you say. So kudos.
You're very kind. I'm very humbled and honored. I don't see ourselves as successful yet. I always think about the challenges of tomorrow, which is our job. But I appreciate your very kind words. And thank
you. Success is somebody else's job, right? Like, you know.
Yes.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thank appreciate you. It.